Heretics, Chapter 12, Paganism and Mr. Lowes Dickinson. Of the New Paganism, or Neo-Paganism, as it was preached flamboyantly by Mr. Swinburne, or delicately by Walter Pater, there is no necessity to take any very grave account, except as a thing which left behind it incomparable exercises in the English language. The New Paganism is no longer new, and it never at any time bore the smallest resemblance to paganism. The ideas about the ancient civilization which it has left loose in the public mind are certainly extraordinary enough. The term pagan is continually used in fiction and light literature as meaning a man without any religion, whereas a pagan was generally a man with about half a dozen. The pagans, according to this notion, were continually crowning themselves with flowers and dancing about in an irresponsible state, whereas if there were two things that the best pagan civilization did honestly believe in, they were a rather too rigid dignity and a much too rigid responsibility. Pagans are depicted as above all things inebriate and lawless, whereas they were above all things reasonable and respectable. They are praised as disobedient when they had only one great virtue, civic obedience. They are envied and admired as shamelessly happy when they had only one great sin, despair. Mr. Lowes Dickinson, the most pregnant and provocative of recent writers on this and similar subjects, is far too solid a man to have fallen into this old error of the mere anarchy of paganism. In order to make hay of that Hellenistic enthusiasm, which has as its ideal mere appetite and egotism, it is not necessary to know much philosophy, but merely to know a little Greek. Mr. Lowes Dickinson knows a great deal of philosophy and also a great deal of Greek, and if his error, if error he has, is not that of the crude hedonist, but the contrast which he offers between Christianity and paganism in the matter of moral ideals, a contrast which he states very ably in a paper called How Long Halt Ye, which appeared in the Independent Review, does, I think, contain an error of a deeper kind. According to him, the ideal of paganism was not, indeed, a mere frenzy of lust and liberty and caprice, but was an ideal of full and satisfied humanity. According to him, the ideal of Christianity was the ideal of asceticism. When I say that I think the idea wholly wrong as a matter of philosophy and history, I am not talking for the moment about any ideal Christianity of my own, or even of any primitive Christianity undefiled by after events. I am not talking for the moment about any ideal Christianity of my own, or even of any primitive Christianity undefiled by after events. I am not, like so many modern Christian idealists, basing my case upon certain things which Christ said. Neither am I, like so many other Christian idealists, basing my case upon certain things that Christ forgot to say. I take historic Christianity with all its sins upon its head. I take it as I would take Jacobinism or Mormonism or any other mixed or unpleasing human product, and I say that the meaning of its action was not to be found in asceticism. I say that its point of departure from paganism was not asceticism. I say that its point of difference with the modern world was not asceticism. I say that St. Simeon Stylites had not his main inspiration in asceticism. I say that the main Christian impulse cannot be described as asceticism, even in the ascetics. Let me set about making the matter clear. There is one broad fact about the relations of Christianity and paganism, which is so simple that many will smile at it, but which is so important that all moderns forget it. The primary fact about Christianity and paganism is that one came after the other. Mr. Lowes Dickinson speaks of them as if they were two parallel ideals, even speaks as if paganism were the newer of the two and the more fitted for a new age. He suggests that the pagan ideal will be the ultimate good of man. But if that is so, we must at least ask, with more curiosity than he allows for, why it was that man actually found his ultimate good on earth under the stars and threw it away again. It is this extraordinary enigma to which I propose to attempt an answer. There is only one thing in the modern world that has been face to face with paganism. There is only one thing in the modern world which in that sense knows anything about paganism, and that is Christianity. That fact is really the weak point in the whole of that hedonistic neo-paganism of which I have spoken. All that generally remains of the ancient hymns or the ancient dances of Europe, all that has honestly come to us from the festivals of Phoebus or Pan, is to be found in the festivals of the Christian Church. If anyone wants to hold the end of a chain which really goes back to the heathen mysteries, he had better take hold of a festoon of flowers at Easter or a string of sausages at Christmas. Everything else in the modern world is of Christian origin, even everything that seems most anti-Christian. The French Revolution is of Christian origin. The newspaper is of Christian origin. The anarchists are of Christian origin. Physical science is of Christian origin. The attack on Christianity is of Christian origin. There is one thing, and one thing only, in existence at the present day, which can in any sense accurately be said to be of pagan origin, and that is Christianity. The real difference between paganism and Christianity is perfectly summed up in the difference between the pagan or natural virtues and those three virtues of Christianity which the Church of Rome calls virtues of grace. The pagan or rational virtues are such things as justice and temperance, and Christianity has adopted them. The three mystical virtues which Christianity has not adopted but invented are faith, hope, and charity. Now, much easy and foolish Christian rhetoric could easily be poured out upon those three words, but I desire to confine myself to the two facts which are evident about them. The first evident fact, in marked contrast to the delusion of the dancing pagan, the first evident fact, I say, is that the pagan virtues, such as justice and temperance, are the sad virtues, and that the mystical virtues of faith, hope, and charity are the gay and exuberant virtues. And the second evident fact, which is even more evident, is the fact that the pagan virtues are the reasonable virtues, and that the Christian virtues of faith, hope, and charity are in their essence as unreasonable as they can be. As the word unreasonable is open to misunderstanding, the matter may be more accurately put by saying that each one of these Christian or mystical virtues involves a paradox in its own nature, and that this is not true of any of the typically pagan or rationalist virtues. Justice consists in finding out a certain thing due to a certain man and giving it to him. Temperance consists in finding out the proper limit of a particular indulgence and adhering to that. But charity means pardoning what is unpardonable, or it is no virtue at all. Hope means hoping when things are hopeless, or it is no virtue at all. And faith means believing the incredible, or it is no virtue at all. It is somewhat amusing indeed to notice the difference between the fate of these three paradoxes in the fashion of the modern mind. Charity is a fashionable virtue in our time. It is lit up by the gigantic firelights of Dickens. Hope is a fashionable virtue today. Our attention has been arrested for it by the sudden and silver trumpet of Stevenson. But faith is unfashionable, and it is customary on every side to cast against it the fact that it is a paradox. Everybody mockingly repeats the famous childish definition that faith is the power of believing that which we know to be untrue. Yet it is not one atom more paradoxical than hope or charity. Charity is the power of defending that which we know to be indefensible. Hope is the power of being cheerful in circumstances which we know to be desperate. It is true that there is a state of hope which belongs to bright prospects in the morning, but that is not the virtue of hope. The virtue of hope exists only in earthquake and eclipse. It is true that there is a thing crudely called charity, which means charity to the deserving poor. But charity to the deserving is not charity at all, but justice. It is the undeserving who require it, and the ideal either does not exist at all or exists wholly for them. For practical purposes, it is at the hopeless moment that we require the hopeful man. and the virtue either does not exist at all or begins to exist at that moment. Exactly at that instant when hope ceases to be reasonable, it begins to be useful. Now the old pagan world went perfectly straightforward until it discovered that going straightforward is an enormous mistake. It was nobly and beautifully reasonable and discovered in its death pang this lasting and valuable truth, a heritage for the ages, that reasonableness will not do. The pagan age was truly an Eden or a golden age in this essential sense that it is not to be recovered. And it is not to be recovered in this sense again that while we are certainly jollier than the pagans and much more right than the pagans, there is not one of us who can, by the utmost stretch of energy, be so sensible as the pagans. That naked innocence of the intellect cannot be recovered by any man after Christianity. And for this excellent reason, that every man after Christianity knows it to be misleading. Let me take an example, the first that occurs to the mind, of this impossible plainness in the pagan point of view. The greatest tribute to Christianity in the modern world is Tennyson's Ulysses. The poet reads into the story of Ulysses the conception of an incurable desire to wander. But the real Ulysses did not desire to wander at all. He desires to get home. He displays his heroic and unconquerable qualities in resisting the misfortunes which balk him, but that is all. There is no love of adventure for its own sake. That is a Christian product. There is no love of Penelope for her own sake. That is a Christian product. Everything in that old world would appear to have been clean and obvious. A good man was a good man. A bad man was a bad man. For this reason, they had no charity, for charity is a reverent agnosticism towards the complexity of the soul. For this reason, they had no such thing as the art of fiction, the novel, for the novel is a creation of the mystical idea of charity. For them, a pleasant landscape was pleasant, and an unpleasant landscape, unpleasant. Hence, they had no idea of romance, for romance consists in thinking a thing more delightful because it is dangerous. It is a Christian idea. In a word, we cannot reconstruct or even imagine the beautiful and astonishing pagan world. It was a world in which common sense was really common.